No one disturbed Scratch and Bo until Evangelina and Enrique returned as the light coming through the cracks in the floor began to fade, signifying that another day was over. When the trap door rose, Enrique looked in at them with his toothless grin and motioned for them to come out. The curtains had been drawn over all the windows. Evangelina looked tired from her day's labors as Bo and Scratch joined her in the hut's main room.
Please, have a seat.
We've been taking it easy all day, Señorita. Why don't you sit down and let us see what we can rustle up for supper?
I'm a pretty fair hand at cooking, if I do say so myself.
Oh, that would be nice for a change. Very well, señores.
An hour after dark, Teresa, Luz, and Pepe arrived. Evangelina blew out the lamp and then let them in. Once they were inside, Enrique relit the lamp as he had the night before. Teresa looked at Bo and Scratch. Bo wore one of Enrique's old shirts. It was too small, but better than nothing. Scratch had a serape draped over his shoulders. Both Texans had rags wrapped around their feet. Walking barefoot out of the mountains the night before had left their feet bruised, scratched, and swollen.
You look better.
I reckon we still got a ways to go before we're up to snuff again. But we got some of our strength back already.
Did Davison's men come to the village looking for you?
They did, but thanks to Señorita Evangelina here, they didn't find us.
What are we going to do now? How long can you keep hiding like that? For that matter, how long must the three of us hide in the hills like animals?
It was your choice to come down here. And speaking of that, what in blazes made you do such a thing?
This little one spoke of how much gold there was for the taking in that mine. I asked myself, why shouldn't some of it belong to me?
And I go where Luz goes.
Anyway, I knew Teresa would not stay in El Paso. I could tell by looking at her how restless she was as soon as the two of you left. If we had not gone with her, she would have run away from my house, stolen a horse, and ridden back here by herself.
This is my home. These are my people. Should I turn my back on them while others fight the battles I should be helping to fight?
We did ask you to stay put.
I sort of figured you wouldn't, though.
I am here now, and ready to wage war against Davidson. Just because I failed the first time does not mean that I will again.
And how are you going to go about waging that war, Señorita? You don't have an army.
I have the people of San Ramon. Some of them will fight, I swear it.
Well, that's all well and good, but an army has to have weapons.
As I told you, we have a few guns that we were able to hide.
That won't help you against Davidson and his men. There are too many of them, and they're too well armed.
Then what do you suggest that we do, Señor Creel? Sit back and wait until Davison is finished brutalizing us and killing us?
Not at all. I was thinking it would go a long way toward evening the odds if we could get our hands on a certain item that's stored in a couple of crates in one of those sheds.
A doggone machine gun.
That's right.
What is this machine gun? I have never heard of such a thing.
I'll bet you've heard of a Gatling gun.
See? I have heard men speak of a weapon by that name.
Well, they call this a Gardner gun, and it spits out a bunch of bullets in a hurry, just like a Gatling. Lancaster used one when he was posted with the British Army in India. We brought it with us the first time we rode down from El Paso, even though I don't reckon any of us except Davison and Lancaster knew it at the time.
You reckon we could figure out how to use such a contraption?
We both used a Gatling gun before. If we had a little time to study on it, I think we could figure it out.
You know, after the things we've seen down here, it'd feel mighty good to cut loose like that on Davidson and his bunch. I'd say they got it coming to them.
Davidson said that a man could probably climb in and out of the canyon at its far end. Do you know if that's true?
Yes. It would not be an easy climb, but it could be done. And we could always let men down with ropes, as we did with Pepe.
The thing is, Davidson's liable to have some guards posted along the canyon now, because he knows we got out of there somehow. We can't just waltz in, grab them crates with a machine gun from the shed, and waltz back out again.
No, we'll probably have to knock out the guards. It's going to take a considerable amount of stealth, and I don't think Scratch and I are up to it right now. We're going to have to rest and recover for a few days first. I hate to ask you folks here in the valley to put up with Davidson for any longer than you have to.
Better to wait until our chances of success improve. We have endured Davidson's cruelty for months now. A few more days will not make any difference.
So you say. As for me, I can almost see that gold glittering in my hands.
The gold would make a lot of difference for the people in this valley. It could make life a lot better for them.
I will not take all of it.
For the next 4 days, the Texans stayed with Evangelina and Enrique, resting and regaining their strength. Their bullet wounds began to heal. Teresa, Luz, and Pepe slipped into the village every night and came to Evangelina's hut. Some of the other villagers knew that Bo and Scratch were there, but Bo warned Evangelina not to spread the word of their presence any more than she had to. Evangelina brought them clothes that fit better, although she couldn't get boots for them. They would have to wear rope sandals when they ventured out next. She found another gun for them, too, a rusty Colt that was newer than Enrique's old cap and ball pistol, but hadn't been taken care of as well. The Colt had 4 rounds in the chamber. That was all the ammunition they had for it. Davidson's men showed up again to search the village, showing that he hadn't forgotten about the Texans. But Bo and Scratch were hidden safely in the little chamber under the hut when the searchers came, and once again, the men didn't spot the trapdoor.
Well, pard, it's been 4 days now. What say we pay another visit to Cutthroat Canyon?
Yeah, I reckon it's about time.
That night, when Teresa, Luz, and Pepe came to the hut, Bo told them about his and Scratch's plans.
We're going after that machine gun tonight.
Are you well enough?
We're feeling right spry again.
It has been less than a week since you were wounded.
We're in pretty good shape for a couple of old fellas.
Now speak for yourself. I ain't all that old, ladies.
I can vouch for that.
We'll need some rope, and a couple of knives would come in handy, too. If there are guards, we'll need to kill them as quietly as possible.
Teresa, Luz, and Pepe had each had a lariat on their saddle when they rode down from El Paso, so ropes wouldn't be a problem. They had pistols and rifles as well. Bo and Scratch each borrowed a pistol from them, tucking the guns inside their belts, so the Texans had 2 guns apiece now. Evangelina left the hut and came back a short time later with a pair of knives. Bo and Scratch added them to their makeshift arsenal as well.
Can I come with you?
I don't know if that'd be a good idea. We need you to stay here and look after Evangelina. She'll need someone to help her if there's any trouble.
Oh, I can do that.
As they were getting ready to leave, Evangelina found a moment to speak to Bo privately.
Thank you for what you said to Enrique. He just wants to help.
I know that. And he's mighty devoted to you. Is he your grandfather?
We are not related. He lived with his daughter and her husband until a fever took them both a few years ago. Someone had to look after him, so I asked him to come live with me. He thinks of me as his granddaughter at times, but as you know, he is easily confused.
Well, what I told him was the truth. Scratch and I will feel better about things with the old-timer here to help you if you need him.
Over the past few days, Evangelina had rounded up serapes and sombreros for them. So when Bo and Scratch slipped out of the hut late that night, after the moon had gone down, they looked like villagers themselves. Teresa, Luz, and Pepe went with them, and once again, a couple of them had to ride double after they reached the place where they had left the horses. Teresa led the way into the mountains. With the moon gone, the stars provided the only light, but it was enough.
Ever since I was a little girl, I roamed over the hills that bordered the valley, climbing from them into the mountains as well. So I know every step of the trails.
I reckon you must have been what we call a tomboy. You grew up riding horses and exploring, didn't you?
What of it? Woman's work never appealed to me.
Why should it? Women work twice as hard as men and receive half the credit. I was married once, I know. That is why I decided to put my skills to better use.
By prostituting yourself? Is that really better?
For me, it was. And now no man tells me what to do.
We better be quiet. I doubt if Davidson has any guards posted outside the canyon except the riflemen in the bell tower, but we can't be sure of that.
They climbed through the hills, eventually dismounted, and began working their way on foot toward the canyon. Pepe had 2 of the coiled lariats draped over his shoulder. At last, they found themselves at the top of a steep, rugged slope.
This is the end of the canyon. If you climb down here, it is a little less than a mile to the mine.
Pepe anchored one end of the rope around an upthrust finger of rock and threw the other end into the canyon.
I'll go down first. When I get to the bottom, I'll give the rope a tug, and that's how you'll know to start down, Scratch.
Got it.
Scratch grasped the rope so he could feel the tug when Bo was finished with the descent.
Scratch and I will dispose of any guards we encounter and get those crates from the storage shed. We'll bring them back here one by one, and then Pepe can toss down the other rope. We'll tie a rope around each end of a crate, and the 3 of you can haul them up. Everybody understand?
The others nodded, and with a grim nod of his own, Bo swung over the edge of the canyon wall and began searching for handholds and footholds. The darkness made the climb more difficult, since Bo had to feel his way down. but he was grateful for it anyway. In the thick shadows that cloaked the canyon, no one could see him, and he was careful not to dislodge any rocks that might clatter down and alert any guards that Davidson had posted up here at the canyon's end. The descent covered 50 or 60 feet, Beau estimated, but it took him a full half hour to make it. Scratch and the others were probably getting a mite worried as his sandaled feet finally touched the ground. Beau tugged on the rope and got an answering tug from Scratch. Then he stepped back and slipped out the borrowed Colt, leaving the old cap and ball pistol tucked inside his belt. Long minutes dragged by. Scratch was being careful and quiet about climbing down, too. At last, Scratch dropped down beside Beau.
Boy, I ain't all that fond of height, you know.
Then it's a good thing it's so dark tonight. You couldn't see where you would have landed if you'd fallen.
Let's go.
They started down the canyon toward the mine, staying close to the wall and still taking it slow and easy. Beau sniffed the air with every few steps because he knew that most sentries couldn't resist the urge to roll themselves a smoke every now and then. He figured they had covered maybe a quarter of a mile when he scented the faint aroma of tobacco smoke. Reaching out unerringly in the darkness, he touched Scratch's shoulder. In the darkness, he could barely make out the nod Scratch gave him to signify that he had smelled the smoke too. They stood absolutely still for long moments, searching the shadows with their eyes and ears for the guard, or guards. Finally, Beau spotted the tiniest pinprick of orange light. The sentry was trying to hide his cigarette in his hand, but the coal on the end of it had winked out between his fingers for just an instant. That was enough for the Texans. They began creeping toward the man with stealth worthy of an Apache or Comanche. Their approach took several minutes, but at last they were close enough for Beau to pin down his position. With the knife Evangelina had given him gripped tightly in his hand, Beau stepped forward and brought the blade up. He reached around the sentry with his other hand and clamped it over the man's mouth as he drove the knife into his back.
Hey, Rockwell, what?
Scratch lunged forward and lashed out with the revolver he held. The gun butt crunched against the man's skull with devastating force. The guard went down without another sound, and a quick slash across the throat as Beau knelt beside him finished him off. Then, Beau and Scratch collected the six guns and the Winchesters carried by the sentries. They didn't let their guard down as they moved on toward the shed where the Gardner gun was stored. They didn't smell any more smoke or hear anything else, though. The shed loomed ahead of them. Beau could make it out in the shadows, a deeper patch of darkness than what surrounded it. It was an open structure with two sides, a roof, and the canyon wall itself forming the back wall. While Scratch kept an eye open for trouble, Beau slipped into the shed and began searching for the crates containing the parts of the machine gun. It took him only a few moments of feeling around inside the shed to reach the exact conclusion that he was hoping to avoid. The Gardner gun was gone.
It's not here. Dadgummit, I was afraid of that. Davidson must have had Lancaster uncrated and put it together. What do we do now?
Let's take a look around. Maybe we can find a gun.
The Texans checked the other storage sheds, but the crates that had contained the Gardner gun were nowhere to be found. Trying to slip into the headquarters building was too much of a risk. They couldn't chance it. Beau motioned toward the far end of the canyon, signaling that they were leaving. They slipped past the bodies of the guards they had killed and reached the end of the canyon a short time later. The rope still dangled there. Pepe would be waiting up above for three tugs on the rope, which was the signal for him to throw down the other lariat. Instead, Beau only pulled sharply on the rope twice, which meant that he and Scratch were coming back up. This time, he was able to grasp the rope himself and walk up the canyon wall with the Winchester under his arm, rather than having the others lift him. Pepe was there when Beau reached the top, ready to reach out and grasp his arm to help him over the rim rock.
What happened? What about the gun?
Gone. Lancaster must have assembled it already. Chances are it's in the headquarters building, ready to be used whenever Davidson gives a word.
Use for what?
Nothing good.
Pepe helped Scratch scramble out of the canyon.
Whew, what now? We head back to San Ramon empty-handed, except for the Colts and Winchesters we got off those varmints we killed?
I don't see that we have much choice in the matter. We're still outnumbered and outgunned. We'll have to figure out some other way to make the odds more even.
The look of disappointment on Evangelina's face when she heard that their mission had failed sent a pang of regret through Bo.
Don't worry. We'll think of something else.
What can we do? We are only a handful against an army.
I wouldn't go so far as to call Davidson and his men an army.
Anyway, I recollect a time when a handful of men stood up to a whole army and did pretty well for themselves. A place called San Jacinto. No offense, you folks being Mexican and all.
Do you think we care about such things now? Evil is evil, whether it takes the form of General Santa Anna or that dog Davidson. He is as much a dictator as Santa Anna ever was.
You're right about that. It'll be dawn soon. Scratch and I will get back in our hiding place and try to figure out what to do next.
You must have some breakfast first. Sit down and I will prepare it.
After everyone had eaten a meager breakfast, Bo and Scratch lifted the trapdoor and climbed back down into the hidden chamber under Evangelina's bedroom, taking the liberated firearms with them.
You got any ideas, Bo? Because for the life of me, I can't think of a damn one.
Not yet. If there was some way we could draw Davidson's men out of the canyon, pick them off one by one.
Bo dozed off while pondering on that. But it seemed that he had been asleep for only moments when he was jerked awake again by a terrible racket. A cold feeling of dread washed through Bo as he realized that he was hearing the Gardner gun in action. Scratch had been startled out of sleep, too.
Son of a bitch!
People of San Ramon!
Davidson is here with his hired killers and some of his other men. They brought that machine gun you talked about.
We heard it. We got these rifles, so we could pick off a few of them. But they can't keep up with that British pepper box.
Come out of your houses! Now! Everyone out!
What do we do?
Go on outside. But stay close to the door, so you can get back in here in a hurry if you need to. Scratch and I will keep an eye on things from the window.
They moved to the window and eased each side of the curtain back, just enough to see out as Evangelina opened the door.
Come with me, Enrique.
No! I will not go out there where the noisy thing is!
Enrique, you have to. I will not let anything happen to you.
He was trembling so hard, it looked like he might fall over. But Enrique allowed her to lead him to the door and out into the bright morning sunlight. At the window, Bo and Scratch could now see that Davidson stood in the plaza in the center of the village with half a dozen men around him. The Gardner gun was set up in the back of a wagon. Lancaster stood behind the gun, gripping its firing handles. A long, thin, stick-like apparatus stuck up from the weapon's breech. A sheaf of several hundred bullets had been slid into a slot on that loading stick. The other men, including Jim Skinner and Douglas, were grouped around the wagon and held Winchesters ready to fire. Slowly, tentatively, the villagers began to emerge from their huts. They shuffled forward fearfully and flinched when Lancaster swung the barrel of the machine gun toward them.
You give me a half a second, I can put a bullet in that Britisher's head.
Yeah, and somebody else would take over that gun and put 1,000 rounds into this hut in the next few minutes. Those adobe walls are pretty thick, but I don't think they'd stand up to that.
I could shoot Davidson his own self. Then he wouldn't be around to give orders no more.
Skinner would. He's just as lobo mean as Davidson.
Well, you could shoot him while I shoot Davidson.
That might do it. But Lancaster could squeeze off 100 rounds into that crowd of villagers and mold him down.
Oh, blast it! There needs to be 3 of us. Then we could end this thing right here now.
Let's wait and see what he's gonna do.
Yeah, well, nothing good, I'll bet.
Davidson climbed into the back of the wagon and stood next to Lancaster.
I know that Creel and Morton are here. You tell me where they are, and no one will be hurt.
Except us.
They've caused me a great deal of trouble. They killed 2 of my men last night. I'm convinced they killed 2 more in El Paso last week. Turn them over to me, and there'll be no more trouble. You know that I'm a man of my word.
Yeah, he says he's gonna run roughshod over these poor folks and make their lives a living hell, and then he does it. That's keeping his word, all right.
I know you're hiding those 2 Texans. Give them to me, or I'll make this whole village sorry. Fire into that shack.
Are you quite sure?
Do what I told you, damn it.
With a shrug of resignation, Lancaster tightened his grip on the gun's handles and swung the twin barrels, one set above the other, toward the hut Davidson had indicated. He tripped the trigger, and the Gardner began to spew lead, alternating so swiftly between the barrels that it appeared flame was pouring constantly from both of them. The weapon quivered a little on its tripod as the long yoke of bullets moved down the stick and the empty brass cartridges went flying out to fall like shining rain. Bo and Scratch could see the target hut from where they were. Villagers scrambled to get out of the line of fire as the slugs pounded into the adobe. The terrific onslaught of lead raised a cloud of dust and threw chunks of the dried mud and straw into the air. Lancaster directed his fire at one area. After only a moment, large pieces of the wall began to collapse as the hail of bullets continued striking sledgehammer blows. Lancaster fired until half the bullets in the stick were gone, then eased off on the triggers and looked over at Davidson to say something. The machine gun fire had knocked out a large, ragged hole in the wall. Davidson jerked his head in a curt nod. Bo felt a twinge of disappointment. If Lancaster had emptied the machine gun, that would have been the time for the Texans to strike. They could have killed Davidson and Skinner without having to worry about Lancaster being able to slaughter the crowd of villagers.
You've seen what I have the power to do. Look at that hood. I can do the same thing to you. But if you give me what I want, if you give me Creel and Morton, you'll be safe. Not only that, but I'll reward whoever tells me where to find him. If you've got a son or a husband or a father working in my mine, he can come back here to the village permanently. But only if you give me those damn Texans.
That's gonna be a hard offer to turn down, partner.
Yeah, I know it. Can't say as I'd really blame anybody who took him up on it.
Hell, there's probably a dozen or more of those folks out there and nowhere in here.
Reckon we may have to chance a shootout. You take Skinner, I'll take Lancaster. We'll leave Davidson for last. He's the least dangerous of those three, at least when it comes to gun handling.
What about the kid?
Take him as soon as he downs Skinner.
Bingo. You open the ball anytime you want.
Skinner, go get one of those old men and put him out in the middle by himself. Looks like these stubborn bastards are gonna take more convincing.
Son of a bitch, he's gonna have Lancaster shoot some poor varmint with that devil gun.
Not if we can help it. Get ready.
Before either of the Texans could fire, though, a scarecrow-like figure burst from the crowd.
Enrique, no!
Evangelina tried to grab the old man, but he moved with surprising speed and spryness and dashed toward the wagon, flapping his arms.
Over there!
Lancaster jerked the barrels of the Gardner gun toward Enrique as he weaved toward the wagon, and for a second, Bo thought the old man was about to be chopped into pieces.
Hold your fire! What's he saying?
Over there!
Take down that shack! Everybody, open fire!
Bo snapped the rifle butt to his shoulder as he used the barrel to push aside the curtain. He had time for one shot, and it had to count, he thought, as he lined his sights on Lancaster. His finger froze on the trigger without taking up all the slack, though, as Enrique swerved without warning in front of the Winchester. The danger to the old man didn't make Lancaster hold his fire. Evangelina flew through the air, tackled Enrique from behind, and knocked him to the ground.
Get down!
Slugs chewed the curtain to shreds and pounded into the walls, some of them coming through to whine wickedly around the roof. The Texans had to retreat and dive through the trapdoor into the space beneath the floor in Evangelina's bedroom. The one thing they had going for them was that Davidson and his men didn't know about that underground space. They fired straight at the hut, well above the level where Bo and Scratch crouched. So for the moment, the only real danger the Texans faced was from ricochets. The Gardner gun abruptly fell silent. Either it had overheated, which rapid-fire weapons were prone to do, or else had run out of ammunition and was useless until another yoke of bullets was fed into that loading stick.
All right, hold your fire! Hold your fire!
The trap door was still open. In fact, it had been shot to pieces as it leaned against the rear wall of Evangelina's room. From where they were, Bo and Scratch could see into the other room. It was brighter than ever in there because the pounding from the machine gun had knocked big chunks out of the wall. All the furnishings were torn up, too. Evangelina's home was ruined.
Out the back window before they have time to reload that damn thing. Go!
Scratch dived through the window in Evangelina's bedroom.
There they are! Kill them!
Bo sprayed bullets toward the gunman as fast as he could work the Winchester's lever. He didn't particularly care if he hit any of them. He just wanted to make them dive for cover. He succeeded in that. And then, as Scratch opened fire from the rear corner of the hut, that gave Bo the cover he needed to scramble out the window himself. Bo suddenly heard hoofbeats and looked around to see Teresa and Luce galloping toward them while Pepe rode off to one side, firing a rifle toward Davidson's men. The women hauled back on the reins and slowed their horses as they came even with the Texans. Bo vaulted up behind her, desperation giving him the agility of a much younger man. Scratch grabbed the arm that Luce reached down toward him and swung up behind her. The women jabbed their heels into the horse's flanks and sent the animals leaping into a run again as bullets whined around them.
Get that damn thing going, Lancaster!
The riders tore around a hut, putting the adobe structure between them and the hot lead searching for them. Luce lined out toward the hills, followed by Teresa and Pepe.
We gotta go back!
Aren't you loco? They'd kill us!
Davidson would kill Evangelina for hiding us out!
We can't help her, it's too late!
We can't abandon her! Luce, you and Scratch, keep going. Teresa and Pepe and I will circle around and try to get to Evangelina before Davidson can hurt her.
The hell with that! You're not gonna have that much fun without me!
You're all loco!
Reluctantly, Luce veered her horse, just like Teresa and Pepe did. They looked back, saw dust boiling into the sky behind them, and knew that Davidson's men had mounted up and were following them. Circling wide, keeping up a running fight as they went, the riders galloped back into San Ramon. Bo wasn't surprised to see that the wagon was still there in the plaza. Davidson was with it, but Lancaster had joined the chase. Davidson had Evangelina, too. His left hand was clamped around her arm as he smashed his right fist back and forth across her face. He hadn't noticed yet that the riders coming toward him were the fugitives, not his own men. Instinct must have warned him before they got there, because he jerked his head around and his eyes widened in shock. He recovered quickly, though, thrusting Evangelina away from him with such force that she tripped and sprawled on the dusty ground. Bo saw Davidson scramble toward the machine gun in the back of the wagon and loosed a round at him from the Winchester, but the bullet went high. Davidson dived into the wagon bed and came up behind the Gardner gun, which appeared to be loaded again. As he grabbed the handles, Evangelina struggled to her feet and ran to meet the riders. Behind her, Davidson swung the twin barrels toward her. Suddenly, Enrique appeared once again, seemingly out of nowhere, and ran toward the wagon, waving his arms.
Run! Evangelina! Run!
Enrique had swerved into the line of fire just as Davidson pulled the trigger. The machine gun literally carved him into pieces as Evangelina glanced back and stopped.
Enrique!
Before she could do anything else, Pepe's horse was beside her, and the big man reached down to scoop her up in the circle of one long arm. He flung her over the horse's back in front of him and held tight to her as he wheeled the animal around. Bullets kicked up dust just behind the horse's hooves. Bo brought the Winchester to his shoulder and cranked off a couple of rounds. One of them spanged off the upper barrel of the Gardner gun. Bo didn't think the mine owner was hit, but the bullet coming so close to him caused Davidson to leap backward and then tumble out of the vehicle. From behind Luce, Scratch gave them covering fire as the pursuit began to catch up. Bo waved Pepe toward the hills. Through the rolling clouds of dust and powder smoke that clogged the air in and around San Ramon, Bo caught a glimpse of Jim Skinner's skull-like face. Bo snapped a shot at him, but the dust obscured Skinner again before Bo could tell if his bullet found the killer or not. Teresa leaned forward, and so did Bo. It was a race to the hills now. They were strung out, Pepe and Evangelina well in front, Luz and Scratch trailing them by 100 yards or so, and Teresa and Bo about 50 yards behind them. Bo felt as much as heard a bullet sizzle through the air near his head. He looked back over his shoulder, but couldn't see anything because of the dust. If he couldn't see the pursuers, then the pursuers couldn't see him and Teresa. They were just firing blindly. Almost before it seemed possible, they found themselves in the hills. Teresa sent the horse plunging into a brush-choked gully. Branches whipped at Bo's face, and brambles clawed his arms and legs.
We're going to rendezvous at the place where Luce and Pepe and I have been hiding out.
How'd you show up just in time to pull us out of that tight spot?
We saw Davison and the other men heading toward the village from the canyon, and we thought it might be a good idea to be close by in case of trouble. Sure enough, by the time we got there...
All hell had broken loose.
That's right. I understand, though, why people call weapons like that devil guns.
They're pretty bad, all right. At least they are in the hands of men like Davidson.
Bo looked behind him again, but couldn't see anything except the brush. He hadn't thought that Teresa would be able to lose the pursuit this quickly, but she knew the country around here a lot better than Davidson's men did. The horse emerged from the gully. Teresa guided it on a twisting course that led higher and higher into the mountains that bordered the valley. She was careful to avoid ridges or other places where she and Beau might be skylighted.
You're pretty good at dodging trouble. A while back, Scratch and I ran into another gal packed iron and rode like a man, named a Rawhide Abbott. She was even a deputy marshal.
I have no wish to be a man, Senor Creel. It's true that I like to ride the high country around the valley, but it would have been fine with me if I never had to pick up a gun.
Life doesn't always give us much choice when it comes to that, especially out here on the frontier. Sometimes it's a matter of using a gun or dying.
Si, and I don't intend to die. At least, not until I have seen Senor Porter Davison die. And if the Blessed Virgin is willing, his death will be at my hand.
By midday, Beau was willing to admit that they had lost Davidson's men. He had been watching their back trail all morning, and there was no sign of the pursuers. The varmints must have given up and headed back to San Ramon. The twisting trails finally brought Beau and Teresa to an isolated spring tucked away in a pocket formed by sheer, rocky walls. They had to follow a cleft in one of those walls to get there. From the outside, the opening wasn't visible, even 20 yards away. But Teresa had known it was there, of course. This was where she and Luce and Pepe had been hiding out for the past several days. Grass grew around the spring, as well as a couple of scrubby trees. The other two horses were tethered to those trees when Beau and Teresa rode up. Scratch, Evangelina, Luce, and Pepe waited by the spring as well.
Did you see Enrique? Could you tell how badly he was hurt?
Señorita. Evangelina, the old man is dead. Davidson killed him. I'm sorry, there's no better way to tell you.
I figured as much, but you were closer and we were holding out a little hope.
He should not have done it. He should not have told Davidson where you were hiding, and he should not have given up his life to save me. I do not deserve it.
I reckon that was his choice to make.
What do we do now? Head back to El Paso?
No! We have to save the people of the valley from Davidson.
And how are we going to do that? There are only six of us. We have limited supplies and only a few guns. Davidson has more than a dozen men and that machine gun. In a fight, it's worth 100 men, maybe even 200.
What about the gold? You came down here in the first place because you wanted a share in the mine.
What good is gold if you are dead? I was willing to help as long as I thought there was a chance we might succeed. Now, after I have seen what we are up against, I realize it's foolish to think we can defeat Davidson. All we're going to do is to get ourselves killed.
Then run away if that's what you want. But you will never get your hands on any of that gold.
Beau and Scratch left the two women glaring at each other as they walked over to the other side of the spring.
You know Davidson's going to send Skinner and some of those other boys into the mountains to look for us. He ain't going to let them rest until they bring back our heads in a tow sack.
You're right about that. Unless we go back to El Paso like Lou suggested.
What, you mean run away?
Yeah.
When hell freezes over.
Not even then.
So what's the plan?
Let me think on it. There's got to be some way to get at Davidson besides trying to steal his ore the way Teresa and her friends were doing.
Yeah, that was never going to work in the long run. And now that he's got that machine gun, he'll send Lancaster along with it the next time the gold wagons head for the border.
We need to hit him closer to home. And I reckon maybe I got an idea how we can do that.
A rocky pinnacle that thrust up above the spring provided a place where Scratch could keep watch on the approaches to the hideout. He climbed up there, taking one of the Winchesters with him, and settled down on a ledge behind some small boulders where no one could see him. Meanwhile, Beau talked to Teresa, asking her about the trails around Cutthroat Canyon. He told her what his idea was.
It would be easier if I went with you. I could show you the best place to carry out your plan instead of just telling you.
Scratch and I'll handle this chore by ourselves. The rest of you stay here and keep an eye out for Davidson's men. He's going to send hunting parties into the mountains after us. Scratch and I are sure of that.
I hope he does. That will give us a chance to kill them.
That won't be easy. Jim Skinner's a mighty dangerous hombre, and I reckon the kid and Lancaster aren't far behind him. Those other men who work for Davidson aren't much better than hard cases themselves.
Teresa looked stubborn for a moment, but then hunkered on her heels. She began drawing lines in the dirt with her finger.
Let me make a map for you. That way you can be sure to get where you need to be.
Once Beau was certain of the route he and Scratch would follow, he turned to the other preparations that they needed to make. He found a couple of limber branches on one of the trees and hacked them off with a rusty old machete. He shaped their ends properly, then plucked hairs from the horses' tails and began braiding them together. Some sort of animal gut would have worked better, but he had to make do with what was available. Once he had fashioned a couple of thin, strong cords from the horsehair, he strung them on the makeshift bows. Then he found some thinner branches he could shape into arrows. They didn't have anything he could use for arrowheads, but luckily, he didn't need any. He wrapped the ends of the arrows in strips of fabric torn from a spare shirt instead. Then he dabbed them with a paste made from gunpowder, which he took from several cartridges after he pried out the slugs, mixed with water from the spring. When he was done, he had four fairly straight arrows and bows capable of firing them. Almost any Indian could have done a better job of it, but Bo hoped the weapons would be good enough to accomplish their goal. As dusk began to settle over the rugged landscape, Scratch climbed down from the rock pinnacle.
Haven't seen any of Davidson's men searching for us. I don't mean they ain't out there somewhere, but they ain't got here yet.
We will keep watch tonight, although I doubt that the men will continue looking after dark. They will be too afraid that one of us will sneak up on them in the night and cut their throats.
We can hope they'll be worried about that anyway.
Are you taking the horses?
No, we'll go on foot. Cutthroat Canyon's only a couple miles from here as the crow flies, and Teresa has told me which trails to take where horses can't follow us. Stealth is going to be more important than speed tonight.
When will you leave?
We'll let it get a little darker. Then we'll head out. And it ought to be good and dark by the time we get to the canyon.
You should eat something first.
You mean like a last meal for the condemned man?
Do not even joke about it, Senor Morton. Without the two of you, we would have no chance to ruin Davidson's plans and get our revenge on him.
I care less about revenge than I do about fixing things so that he can't continue making life miserable for the folks in the valley. We're going to make that more difficult for him anyway.
As soon as enough of the light had faded from the sky, Bo and Scratch took the crude bows and arrows, along with a Colt and Winchester apiece, and set out toward Cutthroat Canyon.
Be careful.
See, Luce, you do care after all. I'm touched.
Go touch yourself. I just don't want anything happening to those guns. We may need them to get back to civilization.
It wasn't long before the Texans were out of sight of the others. They followed the cleft through the rocks, and when they emerged from the narrow passage, Bo took the lead. He had committed the route to memory, as Teresa explained it to him, and believed he could follow it, even in the dark like this. The 2 miles to the canyon took more than 2 hours to cover. The trails twisted and turned, and several times Bo and Scratch had to climb steep slopes, which wasn't easy carrying the weapons. Eventually, though, they came to the rim rock above Cutthroat Canyon. Pausing there, they crouched behind some rocks to study the scene below them. They were across the canyon from the mine. Lights were visible in the windows of the headquarters building and the barracks used by the supervisors. The long building where the workers lived was dark. Some of the workers were in the mine tunnel right now, Bo knew. In his greed, Davidson kept 2 shifts going so that the mine operated 24 hours a day. That worried Bo. He hoped that the walls and ceilings of the tunnel had been shored up properly and that the support beams were thick and strong. They would have to hope for the best, he told himself. At least there would be a little distance between the tunnel and the blast.
You want the powder shed or the headquarters?
I'll take the headquarters building. You're probably a better shot with a bow than I am, but I'm a better hand with a rifle than you.
By the time they start coming out there like rats from a sinking ship, I intend to be back down here with you.
Good luck, amigo.
And to you too, pard.
With that, the Texans split up, Bo heading up the canyon along the rim rock. It didn't take him long to reach a spot directly opposite the shed where Davidson's supply of blasting powder was stored. He had brought only one of the arrows with him, leaving Scratch with the other 3, so he would have only 1 shot at the shed. Laying the Winchester on the ground beside him, Bo fished a lucifer out of the pocket of his jeans and snapped it into life with his thumbnail. He held it to the rag-wrapped head of the arrow, and the gunpowder paste ignited instantly with a sharp flare. Bo stood up as he knocked the burning arrow onto the bowstring, and as he did so, he heard from inside the canyon.
Oh, shit! Look out!
As he had suspected, Davidson had posted guards at the shed, and they had spotted the flames. But those guards couldn't stop the arrow as Bo sent it flying across the canyon. He dove to the ground as soon as he had loosed the shaft, knowing that the guards would open fire on him. Muzzle flame spurted in the darkness, and bullets whined over his head. He snatched up the Winchester as he lay flat at the edge of the rimrock and started blasting away in return. The arrow landed on the roof of the shed and continued burning. Bo paused in his rifle fire.
Hey! Climb up on the shed and put that fire out!
The hell with that! I'm getting out of here!
They dashed toward the mine. Bo sped them on their way with a couple of shots. As he did so, he saw more streaks of fire in the night as Scratch shot flaming arrows on top of the headquarters building and the supervisor's barracks. The roof of the powder shed was on fire now. Bo scrambled to his feet and started retreating. He looked back and saw part of the blazing roof collapse among the stacked kegs of blasting powder. One of the fallen timbers must have broken the lid of a keg. Bo felt the vibration from the blast through the soles of the rope sandals he wore, but it wasn't strong enough to knock him off his feet. He knew the force of the explosion would be magnified as it traveled through the earth, but hoped that since a lot of it had gone up into the air, it wouldn't be strong enough to shake down the roof of the mine tunnel. Bo broke into a run toward the spot on the rimrock where he had left Scratch. As he approached, he saw that the roof of the headquarters building was burning, as was the roof of the supervisor's barracks. Scratch's Winchester cracked steadily as he peppered the buildings with slugs, concentrating on the doors so he could keep the men inside pinned down as long as he could. They didn't want Davidson's men running outside to fight the fires. Bo came up beside him, dropped to a knee, and started shooting as well.
Sounded like you made that one arrow yours count, partner. That shit blowed up real good.
Davidson won't be using that powder in the mine, that's for sure. The flames have spread enough. Let's hold our fire for a minute and see what happens.
Both Texans sprawled out on their bellies at the edge of the rimrock, where they wouldn't present a target for anyone in the canyon. Down below, the flames had spread all the way across the roofs of both buildings, and the walls were starting to burn as well. No one would be able to extinguish the blazes now. Predictably, only a few more minutes went by before men began to dash out of the headquarters buildings and the barracks. No one wanted to be trapped in the sort of inferno that the buildings would soon become. Also predictably, they were shooting as they came, spraying lead into the air from pistols and rifles. They were firing blind, because they couldn't be sure where Bo and Scratch were, or even who was responsible for the havoc that had descended on Cutthroat Canyon. The Texans thrust the barrels of their Winchesters over the edge of the canyon wall and aimed at the men trying to escape from the burning building. As they squeezed off shot after shot, they saw several men tumble to the ground. The leaping flames provided a garish light, but Bo and Scratch couldn't tell who had fallen. They backed away from the edge of the canyon in a hurry as bullets began slamming into the rimrock. They had done about as much damage as they could hope to do for one night.
Let's head back to camp. We'll try to find out in the morning if we got Davidson.
Or Skinner. I ain't sure which of those two snakes is the most dangerous.
Davidson. He's got the money. It's a lot harder to pull his fangs.
Bo and Scratch stayed low until they were well out of sight of the canyon. An orange sky loomed behind them, lit up by the burning buildings. Chances were, the headquarters and the barracks would burn to the ground. Then they made their way higher in the mountains, retracing the path that had brought them to the canyon.
You reckon Teresa and the others heard the blast?
I'm sure they must have. They had to have heard it in the village, too. Maybe it gave them some hope.
Instincts developed over long years of living on the frontier kept Bo from getting turned around as he and Scratch moved through the rugged terrain toward the hidden camp. When they reached the cleft and started through it, they paused.
It's just us, Pepe.
Are you both all right?
We're fine. You heard the explosion?
We heard it. That's what I wanted to do a week ago when I came back down here from El Paso. What about Davison? Were you able to kill him?
Don't know yet. We downed a few of them when they came running out of the buildings we set on fire, but I couldn't tell if one of them was Davidson.
Well, neither could I. I got my fingers crossed, though.
I'll stand guard here. Whistle when you get to the end of the cleft so Pepe will know it's you. He's waiting at the other end with a rifle.
We don't mind taking our turns on watch.
I think you two have done enough for tonight. Even if you didn't kill him, you've hurt Davidson more than anyone else has been able to in the past 6 months.
The glow in the sky finally faded, and by morning there wasn't even any smoke rising from the ashes of Porter Davidson's headquarters. None that Bo and Scratch could see anyway. Along with Teresa, they worked their way through the mountains to a spot where they could look down into the canyon from several hundred feet above it. The three of them were hunkered behind some rocks, being careful not to let the morning sunlight reflect off the rifles they carried. Just as Bo expected, the two buildings Scratch had set on fire with the flaming arrows had burned completely, leaving only blackened piles of rubble. In the place where the powder shed had stood was a crater in the ground, and a huge hole gouged out of the canyon wall. Men moved in and out of the mouth of the mine tunnel, so Bo assumed the operation continued normally there.
I was worried that the explosion would cause a cave-in. I'm glad to see that it didn't.
I think the men forced to work in there might have preferred being buried in a cave-in to living as Davison's slaves. I know I would have.
Look yonder. Man riding out of the canyon.
Wish I had a good pair of field glasses. Can't make out who the men are. But I have a feeling the skinny hombre in the lead is Jim Skinner.
I'm afraid you're right. I was hoping we'd kill that skull-faced varmint.
No such luck. Is that the kid with him?
I think so. Ain't sure, though.
Where are they going?
Hunting. That would be my guess.
Hunting? For what sort of game?
Us.
Davidson knows we got away from the village the other day. He's smart enough to realize that we were behind what happened last night. So he's sending Skinner and some of his other men to track us down. They'll try to pick up our sign on the Rimrock where we were when we fired those flaming arrows.
They will never find our camp. He's too well hidden.
I hope you're right, Señorita.
Blasted. That's Davidson, ain't it? That fella poking around the edges of what's left of the headquarters building?
I think so. And that's Lancaster with him. Maybe they're looking for what's left of the Gardner gun.
After a few minutes, Davidson and Lancaster moved out of sight and didn't come back. Bo, Scratch, and Teresa watched for a while longer.
We might as well go back to camp. We know now that Davidson's still alive, and so are Skinner, Lancaster, and the kid.
I thought for sure we must have got at least one of them last night. I never have figured out how come the worst varmints are so dang lucky.
Just seems that way. Justice catches up to them sooner or later.
Can't be soon enough to suit me where Davidson's concerned.
The three of them started back toward the hideout. Pepe was on guard at the entrance to the cleft this morning.
What did you see?
Pepe's expression fell when they told him that despite the physical damage to the mine buildings, Davidson was still alive, and so were his three remaining hired gun wolves. They went on to the camp, where Evangelina and Luce were just as anxious to hear the news and just as disappointed when they did.
What else can we do? That's it. Davidson can rebuild the buildings and have more blasting powder brought in. He has won.
No. There must be some way to lure him out into the open where we can get our hands on him. Once Davidson is dead, the others will leave, and life in the valley can go back to normal.
I wouldn't count on that. The rest of those hombres know how much gold is in that mine, and they ain't gonna give it up without a fight, whether Davidson is alive or not.
It might fall out amongst themselves, though, without him around to hold them together. That would make them easier to pick off.
That's what we're gonna have to do. Engine them.
Bo knew exactly what his old friend meant. They were still outnumbered and outgunned, so they would have to whittle down the odds against them by picking off Davidson's men one or two at a time. Bo explained what he was planning.
The four of you will stay here while Scratch and I see what we can do about evening things up.
I can't help you.
And I as well.
You work for me, not these Texans.
Our goals are the same. We all want Davidson's hold on the valley and the mine broken for good, so that he can no longer enslave these people.
And so that we can get rich.
Well, that too.
Scratch and I are used to working together. It'll be easier for us if you folks stay here. Keep an eye out for Davidson's men.
You mean so we won't get in your way?
If you want to put it that way, yes. I don't want one of us getting shot because we're worrying about you instead of watching out for trouble.
Fine.
And that doesn't mean you can wait until we're gone and then sneak off and follow us like you did before when we left you in El Paso.
Teresa just glared at him and didn't say anything. Bo went through their ammunition. They had enough so that he and Scratch each loaded 15 rounds into their Winchesters, filling the magazines. They took 15 cartridges each for their Colts, too. That left enough ammunition in the camp so that Teresa, Evangelina, Luce, and Pepe could put up a fight if they needed to. But it would be good if they could get their hands on more ammunition somehow, Bo thought. Of course, there was one good way to do that. Kill some of Davidson's men and take it from them. The Texans left the camp a short time later. The temperature rose as the sun climbed toward its zenith, and Bo and Scratch both missed their Stetsons. The shade provided by the broad-brimmed hats would have been welcome.
Reckon we'll ever get all our gear back? Not that it's really important, I reckon, but...
I know what you mean. I'd like to have my own guns and boots back. We can always replace whatever we lost later, though.
Especially if we wind up owning a share of that gold mine.
What are you talking about?
Well, I was just thinking. Luce intends to claim a share in the mine for helping these folks, and Seems to me that we've already done a whole heap more to fight Davidson than she has.
She helped rescue us when we were about to be massacred by that machine gun.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't really care how big the shares are. It just seems to me like we ought to get something for our trouble. Maybe a couple of saddlebags full of gold ore, you know, something like that.
We'll worry about that later. First, we have to get rid of Davidson.
Live through whatever's coming.
Yeah. Being alive would make it a lot easier to spend any gold we might happen to wind up with.
They climbed back to the spot that gave them a good view of the canyon and the surrounding area. Again, being careful not to skylight themselves or let the sun glint on their rifle barrels, they searched the landscape with their eyes.
There's a ridge about 500 yards west of here. A couple of riders just poked their heads above it for a second.
It's probably two of Davidson's other men. I don't reckon Skinner would make a mistake like that.
Nope, nor the kid either, I'll bet. But that's bound to be the search party. I mean, who else would be riding around this godforsaken wilderness today?
Rurales, maybe?
They wear those gray steeple-crown sombreros, remember? These fellas had on regular Stetsons.
Which way were they going?
Heading yonder ways. Don't I recollect Teresa saying something about a natural bridge over there?
You do. There's a big gully, and that bridge is the easiest way over it.
Once those fellows ride on the bridge, there wouldn't be any place for them to go if somebody was to throw down on them. Can we get there in time, though?
Only one way to find out.
Moving quickly now, they headed across country toward the natural bridge Teresa had mentioned. The natural bridge was empty when they finally reached it, and Bo didn't see any signs to indicate that anyone had crossed it recently. A horse might kick over a rock so that its damp underside showed, or an iron shoe could nick a stone and leave a mark. Bo didn't see anything like that here, and Scratch confirmed his opinion. The bridge was an arch of stone that spanned a gully about 40 feet deep. It was 15 or 16 feet wide, plenty big enough for men to ride over it in single file. Two men could ride over it side by side if they had to, although that would be riskier with the dangerous drop into the gully yawning on either side.
What do you think? One man at each end of the bridge so they'll be caught between a rock and a hard place?
Which end do you want?
I'll take the other one. I'll see some rocks over yonder I can ford up in.
Bo found a good place for himself in the rocks near the eastern end of the bridge, while Scratch trotted to the other side. Within minutes, both Texans were well hidden, waiting for Davidson's men to show up. They didn't have to wait very long. Bo estimated that less than 15 minutes had passed when he heard horseshoes clinking against stone not far away, and then four riders came into view. Bo tensed as he realized that Skinner and Douglas weren't among them. He recognized the four men as some of Davidson's mine supervisors, drafted to be manhunters instead. They were hard-faced men, capable of whatever brutal violence was necessary, but they weren't professional killers like Skinner and the kid. Bo realized that he couldn't cut down on them without warning. He stayed hidden until the four riders had moved out onto the natural bridge, then stood up and leveled his rifle at them.
Hold it right there!
The men reined their horses to a halt, jerked around in their saddles, and started reaching for their guns as they did so.
First man who touches iron, I'll blow him out of the saddle!
Drop your guns and get off those horses! You'll be walking back to Cutthroat Canyon!
Damn it, Pearl! We gonna let them get away with this?
Don't look like we got much choice. They got the drop on us.
The man called Burl untied the thong holding the holster to his leg, then unbuckled the gun belt, dangled it from his hand, and let it fall to the rock bridge. He started to reach for the Winchester that stuck up from a saddle boot.
Careful with that rifle. Don't make my trigger finger get touchy.
Burl gripped the Winchester by the breech, slid it from its sheath, and then held it by the barrel as he lowered it to the bridge. The other three men followed suit, carefully disarming themselves. Bo wanted the horses because he figured the extra ammunition the men had brought with them would be in the saddlebags.
Get down and walk over here.
You can't make us walk all the way back to the mine. Hell, it must be more than 2 miles.
Yeah? Well, when you get there, maybe your sore feet will remind you that you shouldn't be working for a skunk like Davidson.
You used to work for him yourself, mister.
Only until I found out what sort of man he really is. You already knew, so you don't have that excuse. Move!
Taking their time about it, the men dismounted. From the corner of his eye, Bo caught the faintest wink of reflected light from the rugged slope above him and to the right. He twisted sharply to one side. As he hit the ground, a bullet whipped past his ear and slammed into the rocks, throwing grit and splinters of stone into the air. Bo rolled behind a boulder, and as he did so, he saw the men on the natural bridge grabbing for the guns they had dropped. He snapped a shot at them, the slug whining off the bridge. On the other side of the gully, Scratch had begun firing as well, but he aimed his shots upward at whoever had just bushwhacked Bo. That had to be Skinner or Douglas, or both gunmen, Bo thought. It had taken them that long to get into position while the others were crossing the bridge. Burl emptied his sixth gun toward Bo, but the bullets all ricocheted harmlessly from the rocks. When Burl tried to leap into the saddle, Bo tracked him with the Winchester and squeezed off a shot. Another bullet from above came too close to Bo for comfort, forcing him to scramble for better cover. He stretched out under the overhang of a rock that shielded him from the bushwhacker's bullets. From this position, he could also fire through the narrow gap between two other rocks at the men on the bridge. One of them made it into the saddle, but his mount, spooked by the gunfire, skittishly danced too close to the edge. The rider tried to throw himself out of the saddle, but he was too late. Man and horse both went over the edge. Bo fired and saw another man double over in agony as the slug punched into his guts. That left just one man on the bridge. Firing a revolver as he ran, the remaining gunman charged toward the western end where Scratch had hidden in the rocks. Scratch put a round from the Winchester into the man's chest that knocked him backward. He landed with his arms and legs splayed out and didn't move again. That left the bushwhackers high above the gully. Bo rolled over and tried to find an angle from which he could draw a bead on them, but the effort was futile. They couldn't see him, and he couldn't see them. Bo kept his head low and listened to the spent bullets zinging around him. Across the gully, Scratch tried to provide some covering fire, but he obviously couldn't get a good angle on the bushwhackers either. Bo could hear two different guns up there, so he was confident the hidden riflemen were Skinner and Douglas. For the moment, it was a standoff, and Bo wondered how long they would keep up the siege. After a few minutes, the shooting died away. Bo and Scratch had already stopped firing to conserve bullets. Silence settled down over the gully and the natural stone bridge that spanned it. The three remaining horses had crossed the bridge and stampeded up the trail on the other side, trying to get as far away from the shooting as they could. So now it was just Bo and Scratch, the bushwhackers hidden above them, and the men in the gully who were dying or already dead. The one Bo had shot in the belly let out a groan. With a wound like that, it would take a while for him to cross the divide. Bo thought about putting a bullet in his head to end his suffering. He didn't have to. One of the hidden riflemen fired suddenly. Douglas had to be responsible for that, Bo thought. He had sensed that the kid had a few shreds of decency left, even though they weren't enough to make him turn against Davidson. Jim Skinner sure wouldn't have performed such a gesture of mercy. Someone else's suffering meant nothing to him. Silence reigned once again along the gully. Bo listened intently, thinking that maybe Skinner and Douglas were trying to work their way down to where they could get better shots at the Texans. Instead of rocks clattering down the slope, though, what he heard after several minutes was the swift rataplan of hoofbeats. Someone was riding away.
I'm coming out, partner. I reckon they lit a shot.
All right. But it might be a trick, so be ready to dive for cover if you have to.
I always am.
Scratch stepped out from the rocks at the far end of the natural bridge. Bo emerged from hiding as well, swinging up the Winchester toward the last place where he had seen the bushwhackers. No shots sounded.
Well, we whittled down the odds a mite. This fellow's dead. Got a box of 45s in his pocket. We can use them.
We'll gather up all the guns and ammunition and take them with us. Those horses that ran off probably didn't go very far either. See if we can find them.
Bo looked down into the gully at the two men and the horse. They all lay there unmoving, busted up by the fall. Bo saw pools of blood around the heads of the men. Scratch climbed down there and salvaged what he could, coming back up with two belted Colts and a Winchester, as well as the saddlebags from the dead horse. He had the saddlebags draped over one shoulder, the gun belts over the other.
You look like you're armed for bear.
Well, more like a coyote or even a skunk since we're talking about Davidson. Don't insult the bears.
Bo grinned, but before he could say anything else, he lifted his head and his eyes narrowed as he heard the distant popping of gunshots.
Son of a bitch, I hear him too. Sounds like they're coming
from the place where we left the others. Let's see if we can find those horses. If we can, they'll get us back there quicker.
Yeah, might make a difference.
They hurried across the bridge and followed the trail on the other side around several bends before they came across the three surviving mounts that Davidson's men had been riding. The horses had stopped to crop at some tufts of hardy grass that grew in the stony ground alongside the trail. Bo and Scratch approached the animals carefully, not wanting to spook them again. Both of the Texans had decades of experience at handling horses, so they were able to walk up and take hold of the reins, even though the skittish horses rolled their eyes a little. Bo and Scratch had buckled on the gun belts Scratch had retrieved from two of the corpses. They slung the extra gun belts and the saddlebags on the back of the extra horse. Mounting up, they rode back across the rock bridge over the gully and started toward the hideout. They couldn't take the exact same route they had used to get here, since they had been on foot then. They spotted some familiar landscapes, and a few minutes later found themselves approaching the narrow cleft through the rocks that led to the hidden spring and clearing. Bo lifted a hand in a signal to stop. He and Scratch reined in.
You reckon Davidson's left gunman waiting in there for us?
I wouldn't be surprised. But the only way to find out what happened to Teresa and the others...
Let's go in there. Yeah, I know it. I'll go first. You stay out here until I give you the all clear.
The hell with that. We'll ride in together.
Same way we charged old Sandy Annie's army at San Jacinto, right?
Right.
They lifted their rifles and hitched their horses into a slow walk forward, entering the cleft through the all but invisible opening in the rock wall. Since the passage wasn't wide enough for two men to ride abreast, Scratch edged ahead. They reined in before they got to the cleft's end and studied what they could see of the clearing around the spring. They didn't see any of the horses, nor was there any sign of Teresa, Evangelina, Luce, or Pepe.
Anybody's in there, they know we're here. We might as well sing out.
Hello to camp!
The Texans looked at each other, then heeled the horses into motion again. They emerged from the shadows of the cleft into the light that flooded the clearing from the sun almost directly overhead.
Look out!
They swung toward the voice and saw a couple of Davidson's men lunging out from behind the scrubby trees near the spring. Guns in their hands spouted flame. Bo and Scratch left their saddles in rolling dives, Scratch going right while Bo went left. Bo came up on one knee and fired the Winchester twice, levering the weapon as fast as he could between the rounds. Scratch's rifle blasted too. The pair of would-be killers went down. One man's throat torn open by Scratch's bullet and fountaining blood, the other with Bo's slugs in his chest. Scratch leaped to his feet and ran over to the fallen men. When he reached them, the first thing he did was kick aside the guns they had dropped. Then he prodded them with a foot to make sure they were dead. Meanwhile, Bo hurried over to Pepe. The big man was lying among the rocks near the spring. Bo knelt beside Luce's bodyguard. Pepe's shirt was soaked with blood, and his eyes were closed. Bo thought for a second that he was dead, but Pepe opened his eyes when Bo touched his shoulder.
Oh, Señor Bo.
That's right, Pepe. I'm right here.
Did those hombres hurt you?
No, I reckon I'm fine.
What about Señor Scratch?
He's all right, too. Neither of us were hit.
The men left here by Davidson?
Both dead. There were only two of them, right?
See, only two. Davidson knew you would come back here when you heard the shots, if you were still alive. He thought Skinner might have already killed you, but he didn't want to take that chance.
Rest easy now. We'll see about patching you up.
Oh, too late. Too late. I know how bad I'm hurt. They thought I was dead. That's why they left me here like this. But I wanted to stay alive until I could warn you and tell you what happened.
Scratch carried over one of the canteens that Luce and Pepe had brought with them from El Paso. He knelt on Pepe's other side and held the canteen to his mouth.
I feel like the water is just running back out of me. I am shot full of holes, no?
Pretty much, yeah. If there was anything we could do...
Just help Luce and the two señoritas. Davidson took them back to the canyon. He said if you were still alive, you would come for them and he could kill you then. If you were already dead, he would make them pay for all the trouble we have caused him.
That son of a bitch don't know about trouble. We're just getting started.
When you see Luz, tell her I...
I'll tell her you loved her, Pepe. But I reckon she must have known that already.
Well, we got plenty of guns and ammunition now.
Too bad we don't have half a dozen good fighting men to use them.
But at least the odds against us aren't as bad as they were. We killed 6 of Davidson's men today, plus we downed a few of them last night. You can't have more than a handful left.
Not counting Skinner and Lancaster and the kid.
Yeah, and they're probably worth at least 2 men apiece. But there's no getting around the numbers. Davidson must have closed down the mine for the time being, because he doesn't have enough men to keep those hombres from the village working.
Then what's he done with them? Let him go back to San Ramon?
I don't figure he'd do that. He'll want to get the mine operation up and running again as soon as he can after we're dead. My guess is that he had them all herded into the barracks and locked up there. All he'd need in that case is a couple of men to guard the building.
Too bad they ain't loose. With the grudges they got against Davidson and his men, they might just clean out that canyon if they got the chance.
I was just thinking the same thing. Some of them would be killed in the fighting, no doubt about that. But men have lost their lives fighting for their freedom as long as there have been tyrants like Davidson.
And I reckon that goes way, way back. We need to figure out a way to get to the barracks and turn them loose.
We couldn't do it if Lancaster still has that machine gun. That wouldn't be a fight, no matter how many of the villagers there are. It'd be plain murder to send them unarmed against that gun.
Come nightfall, we're gonna have to slip in there and find out what's going on.
I think you're right. That gives us some time to take care of the chore we need to do here. We got a grave to dig.
When Bo and Scratch had lowered Pepe into the grave and covered it again, they stood beside the mound of dirt and rocks with lowered heads.
El Señor Dios, please have mercy on a good man's soul. Amen.
You know Pepe worked in a whorehouse, don't you?
Sure. What of it?
Most folks would say he ain't fit to go to heaven.
Yeah, when people start looking down on somebody else, they usually forget that they're sinners, too. Pepe looked after the girls who worked for Luz and didn't let anybody hurt them. And he was devoted to Luz, you know that. Nearly every big hombre I've ever met had a gentle heart. Pepe was no different.
Psalm singers would call you a heathen for feeling like that.
Well, I'm not sure I'd want to be in the same heaven where they are anyway.
Amen to that. You know, this would be a pretty nice place if it wasn't for those 2 dead hombres.
Give the Zopilates and the coyotes a while to do their work. And Pepe can rest here alone in peace.
They didn't know where the 2 men had left their horses. Part of the afternoon was spent in finding the animals because Bo and Scratch didn't want the horses dying of thirst because they were tied up and couldn't get to water. They located the horses outside the cleft, several hundred yards away, and brought them back to the hideout. That gave them 5 mounts.
Are we taking all of them with us?
We may need them before this is over. If we're able to free Teresa, Evangelina, and Luz, they'll need horses. And we may not be able to find the ones Teresa and Luz and Pepe rode down here from El Paso.
I never would have thought Luz would put on pants and ride a horse. I reckon the lure of gold will make folks do things you never expect of them.